Practice Test 3, Part 3. In this part, you will hear two segments from a radio program. After each segment, you will hear six questions about it. Before each segment begins, you will have time to preview the questions. You will hear each segment twice. Then you will hear the questions once. If you want to, you may take notes as you listen. You should mark A, B, or C. Do you have any questions? Look at the questions, then listen to the first segment. Now you will hear the first segment.
We're all familiar with the annoying symptoms of hay fever: a runny nose, itchy eyes, and sneezing. But did you know that hay fever affects around 20 to 25% of the population? Jill Bowman reports.
What exactly is hay fever? Well, it's an allergic reaction triggered by pollen from grass, trees, or weeds. Most of us inhale pollen spores with no ill effects. However, in people with a sensitivity to pollen, the spores are perceived by the body as foreign invaders, so the immune system immediately reacts to fight them off, as allergist Dr. Timothy Lamont explains.
In order to fight off pollen spores, the body first produces antibodies that attach themselves to the cells in the nose, eyes, and mouth. If exposure to the pollen continues, these cells release chemicals called histamines, which flush the pollen out of the airways and cause the hay fever symptoms. Now, unfortunately, there's been a dramatic increase in the number of people affected by this unpleasant condition. Statistics show that there are four times as many hay fever sufferers today as there were in the 1950s, and this could be due to global warming. Warmer spring temperatures mean that the pollen season starts earlier and lasts longer.
However, am I right in saying that some experts see our obsession with cleanliness as the culprit? They claim that, today, we're so protected from germs and infection during childhood that our immune systems have become lazy. We don't develop natural resistance, so we get hay fever. And, of course, the amount of pollen in the air, or the pollen count, as it's called, can vary significantly over a 24-hour period. So, what solutions are there?
Well, the daily pollen count peaks from 7 to 9 a.m. and from 3 to 7 p.m., so people with hay fever can certainly benefit from being indoors during these times and keeping their windows closed. Fresh air is not fresh for hay fever sufferers. It contains pollen grains. But before looking for solutions, the most important thing is to identify which type of pollen you're allergic to. For an accurate diagnosis, you need to have a skin prick test, in which allergens are injected under the skin to test your reaction to them. Some people find antihistamine drugs or nasal sprays quite effective. These medications once caused side effects such as drowsiness, but they're much improved now. For severe cases, immunotherapy is an option. Patients are injected regularly with a low dose of pollen over 3 to 4 years until the body no longer registers the pollen as an invader. Although this treatment has a high rate of success, the number of injections is obviously a drawback. However, recent trials have shown very promising results for an alternative vaccine involving just 6 injections. And patients who receive this new experimental vaccine have reported a significant reduction in symptoms.
Well, that's good news for hay fever sufferers. Let's hope that one day, this kind of therapy will replace the traditional and less convenient solutions, such as sprays and pills.
Now you will hear the segment again.
We're all familiar with the annoying symptoms of hay fever: a runny nose, itchy eyes, and sneezing. But did you know that hay fever affects around 20 to 25% of the population? Jill Bowman reports.
What exactly is hay fever? Well, it's an allergic reaction triggered by pollen from grass, trees, or weeds. Most of us inhale pollen spores with no ill effects. However, in people with a sensitivity to pollen, the spores are perceived by the body as foreign invaders, so the immune system immediately reacts to fight them off, as allergist Dr. Timothy Lamont explains.
In order to fight off pollen spores, the body first produces antibodies that attach themselves to the cells in the nose, eyes, and mouth. If exposure to the pollen continues, these cells release chemicals called histamines, which flush the pollen out of the airways and cause the hay fever symptoms. Now, unfortunately, there's been a dramatic increase in the number of people affected by this unpleasant condition. Statistics show that there are 4 times as many hay fever sufferers today as there were in the 1950s, and this could be due to global warming. Warmer spring temperatures mean that the pollen season starts earlier and lasts longer.
However, am I right in saying that some experts see our obsession with cleanliness as the culprit? They claim that, today, we're so protected from germs and infection during childhood that our immune systems have become lazy. We don't develop natural resistance, so we get hay fever. And, of course, the amount of pollen in the air, or the pollen count, as it's called, can vary significantly over a 24-hour period. So, what solutions are there?
Well, the daily pollen count peaks from 7 to 9 a.m., and from 3 to 7 p.m., so people with hay fever can certainly benefit from being indoors during these times and keeping their windows closed. Fresh air is not fresh for hay fever sufferers. It contains pollen grains. But before looking for solutions, the most important thing is to identify which type of pollen you're allergic to. For an accurate diagnosis, you need to have a skin prick test, in which allergens are injected under the skin to test your reaction to them. Some people find antihistamine drugs or nasal sprays quite effective. These medications once caused side effects such as drowsiness, but they're much improved now. For severe cases, immunotherapy is an option. Patients are injected regularly with a low dose of pollen over 3 to 4 years until the body no longer registers the pollen as an invader. Although this treatment has a high rate of success, the number of injections is obviously a drawback. However, recent trials have shown very promising results for an alternative vaccine involving just 6 injections, and patients who receive this new experimental vaccine have reported a significant reduction in symptoms.
Well, that's good news for hay fever sufferers. Let's hope that one day, this kind of therapy will replace the traditional and less convenient solutions, such as sprays and pills.
Number 39. According to Dr. Lamont, what happens to people who are allergic to pollen? Number 40. What does Dr. Lamont suggest as a reason for the rise in hay fever sufferers? Number 41. What does the reporter imply might be another cause of the increase in hay fever? Number 42. What does Dr. Lamont say about the pollen count? Number 43. Which suggestion does Dr. Lamont make for controlling the symptoms of hay fever? Number 44. What is the main purpose of this report? Look at the questions, then listen to the second segment. Now you will hear the second segment.
In 1953, Sir Edmund Hillary and his local guide in Nepal, Sherpa Tenzing Norgay, completed the first successful ascent of Mount Everest. When they planted the first flag on the summit of the world's highest peak, they found a remote, deserted place, unspoiled by man. But today, the situation has changed dramatically. Let's talk to Chuck Davis to get more on this story.
Although climbing Mount Everest was once considered a challenge that only an elite few could aspire to, this is no longer the case. Hordes of climbers are practically standing in line to attempt the ascent of Mount Everest, and Nepalese guides eagerly await prospective clients. This has had grave ecological consequences. With me to discuss this issue are journalist Simon Freeman and expert climber Barbara Wilkinson. Thanks for joining me.
Thanks for having me.
Glad to be here.
Simon, can you give us some background on how this problem has developed?
I'd be glad to. Veteran climbers of the past planned serious expeditions requiring intense preparation, and a successful ascent was considered a major accomplishment. But today, Everest attracts the thrill seeker, a product of the recent boom in demand for extreme holidays, a person looking for a once-in-a-lifetime experience or a cheap thrill. And naturally, local businessmen cater to this new breed of visitor. Nepalese guides have so much expertise that the old, the young, the inexperienced, and even the physically challenged can now climb Everest.
As an experienced climber, how does that make you feel, Barbara?
I think it's this rent-an-expedition-and-do-Everest attitude that has trivialized the achievements of those who conquered the peak. And it also trivializes Everest itself. To me, reaching the highest point on our planet, 29,035 feet high, is still a fantastic feat. However, climbers like myself question the price that is being paid. Has Everest become just another tourist trap? At $65,000 for a group climb, the government of Nepal isn't about to scale back tourism in the region. The sheer numbers are overwhelming.
When we spoke earlier, Barbara, you mentioned that an ecological disaster is in the making. Were you referring to a result of the tourist boom you've just described?
Yes, tourists need accommodations and facilities, both of which are destroying this once pristine place. There is serious depletion of natural resources, such as water, and glaciers are receding at an alarming pace. In addition, there is a distasteful colonization of the area by restaurants and internet cafes. But perhaps the worst effect is the trash on Everest. Discarded junk, plastic wrappings, food cans, and oxygen bottles. One cleanup team returned to base camp with 24 tons of refuse. They estimated another 10 tons of garbage is still left on the slopes.
That's terrible.
Yes. And to make matters worse, there's no infrastructure in the region to cope with such pollution. And then there's the deforestation by locals who cut down trees to heat water and cook meals for tourists. Everest is inundated with visitors. And as a result, for elite climbers, it now holds few mysteries. We look for novelty on less well-known, yet technically difficult peaks in the Himalayan range.
That may not be enough. With this unique ecosystem facing disaster, I think it's time that authorities pushed for radical solutions, like the temporary closure of the world's highest peak. It's the only solution I can see for now.
It's a shame it's come to that, but it looks like they will have to.
Now you will hear the segment again.
In 1953, Sir Edmund Hillary and his local guide in Nepal, Sherpa Tenzing Norgay, completed the first successful ascent of Mount Everest. When they planted the first flag on the summit of the world's highest peak, they found a remote, deserted place, unspoiled by man. But today, the situation has changed dramatically. Let's talk to Chuck Davis to get more on this story.
Although climbing Mount Everest was once considered a challenge that only an elite few could aspire to, this is no longer the case. Hordes of climbers are practically standing in line to attempt the ascent of Mount Everest, and Nepalese guides eagerly await prospective clients. This has had grave ecological consequences. With me to discuss this issue are journalist Simon Freeman and expert climber Barbara Wilkinson. Thanks for joining me.
Thanks for having me.
Glad to be here.
Simon, can you give us some background on how this problem has developed?
I'd be glad to. Veteran climbers of the past planned serious expeditions requiring intense preparation, and a successful ascent was considered a major accomplishment. But today, Everest attracts the thrill seeker, a product of the recent boom in demand for extreme holidays, a person looking for a once-in-a-lifetime experience or a cheap thrill. And naturally, local businessmen cater to this new breed of visitor. Nepalese guides have so much expertise that the old, the young, the inexperienced, and even the physically challenged can now climb Everest.
As an experienced climber, how does that make you feel, Barbara?
I think it's this rent an expedition and do Everest attitude that has trivialized the achievements of those who conquered the peak. And it also trivializes Everest itself. To me, reaching the highest point on our planet, 29,035 feet high, is still a fantastic feat. However, climbers like myself question the price that is being paid. Has Everest become just another tourist trap? At $65,000 for a group climb, the government of Nepal isn't about to scale back tourism in the region. The sheer numbers are overwhelming.
When we spoke earlier, Barbara, you mentioned that an ecological disaster is in the making. Were you referring to a result of the tourist boom you've just described?
Yes. Tourists need accommodations and facilities, both of which are destroying this once pristine place. There is serious depletion of natural resources, such as water, and glaciers are receding at an alarming pace. In addition, there is a distasteful colonization of the area by restaurants and internet cafes. But perhaps the worst effect is the trash on Everest. Discarded junk, plastic wrappings, food cans, and oxygen bottles. One cleanup team returned to base camp with 24 tons of refuse. They estimated another 10 tons of garbage is still left on the slopes.
That's terrible.
Yes, and to make matters worse, there's no infrastructure in the region to cope with such pollution. And then there's the deforestation by locals who cut down trees to heat water and cook meals for tourists. Everest is inundated with visitors. And as a result, for elite climbers, it now holds few mysteries. We look for novelty on less well-known, yet technically difficult peaks in the Himalayan range.
That may not be enough. With this unique ecosystem facing disaster, I think it's time that authorities pushed for radical solutions, like the temporary closure of the world's highest peak. It's the only solution I can see for now.
It's a shame it's come to that, but it looks like they will have to.
Number 45. What does Chuck Davis imply about climbing Mount Everest today? Number 46. According to Simon Freeman, how are modern climbers different from those of the past? Number 47. What does Barbara Wilkinson imply about the government of Nepal? Number 48. What does Barbara Wilkinson regard as the most serious problem on Everest? Number 49. What does Simon Freeman suggest the authorities do? Number 50. What is the main purpose of this report? End of listening test.